Amazon 5-star Theater presents Real Customer Reviews, performed by Ed Helms. Tonight's review, Tactical Jacket. I was living a simple life. Didn't get out much. Then, I bought this jacket, and everything changed. Women came flocking to me from lands domestic and foreign. On the 245-day sailboat voyage home, I was attacked by a shark. I knew it was the jacket he was after. Giving up the jacket in exchange for my life. 5 stars. Amazon customer 69. Shop the perfect gift this holiday on Amazon.
Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk. And maybe, after all of that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news, it doesn't have to be this way. Thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all of your recurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something is coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel, or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores. Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk. And maybe, after all of that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news, it doesn't have to be this way. Thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all of your recurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something is coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel, or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
Here's golf legend John Daly.
Hell yeah, these wins are piling up faster than my divorces.
I only spent on Moto, America's social casino. You know I've won a couple of majors. And on Moto, I've won majors, grands, and epic jackpots on their classic Vegas slots with huge, huge bonus rounds. Moto Casino adds new games and awards players free coins every single day. Grip it and spin it on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today. Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
This is Hidden Killers Live with Tony Bruschi, Stacey Cole, and Todd Michaels.
Let's continue getting into a case that is beyond strange. It is certainly into the alarming category now. The Melody Buzzard, Ashley Buzzard, being the mother of now missing Melody for almost 2 months. We have a mother who allegedly told a legal assistant that she handed her 9-year-old daughter over to a mystery couple she met at a zoo. You know, like you do. A couple whose name she doesn't know, whose number she can't produce, whose address she can't confirm, and whose plan supposedly kept shifting across multiple states. She's deleting accounts, swapping plates, ripping photos off missing posters, building what looks like a shrine on her couch out of a pillow that she's dressed as her daughter, and refusing to give law enforcement even a single verifiable detail about where her child is. And at the center of all this is a little girl who has not been heard from in nearly 2 months. I want to spend some time today looking not just at the behavior itself, but the psychological mechanisms behind it, and why, even with this level of concerning behavior, the system appears completely powerless to intervene. To do that, Siobhan Scott, psychotherapist and author, is with us. Siobhan, when you look at these claims, a mother insisting her house is bugged, allegedly, according to this friend that visited, believing strangers are monitoring her, deleting accounts, thinking law enforcement is tracking her every move, assuming the man in her living room is an undercover officer, and handing her daughter allegedly to a couple she claims she met at a zoo. What does that constellation of behavior suggest to you in terms of her mental state?
Classic paranoid psychosis, which should be considered a five-alarm fire. And this is a person who, as I understand it, was diagnosed some years in the past with bipolar disorder. This can be treated with medication and counseling, but she's refused all treatment, which is what often happens in our society where we can't mandate it. And this is very, very dangerous. And she's been this way apparently for years. So that's the question, is why can't something be done?
Yeah, that is the question. That's the thing. Everyone is screaming. I'm screaming. Everybody's screaming. Yeah. We all scream for melody. It's a weird rhyme there, but it's making little to no sense at this point. We now have been watching this for literally months. The daughter is missing, and we have reports directly from that friend that went into that house that is saying these very, very disturbing things. Take the child out of the equation. Let's say there is no kid. Let's say she never even had a daughter. If someone is displaying this type of behavior and presenting in this sort of weird, delusional way of thinking, aren't there services that can go in to help an adult protective services of some sort? Because clearly this woman is not in a good place.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the scary thing is, in every city in the country, you've got people on your block. Somebody on your block is probably suffering from problems similar to this, even if not this extreme. So in the U.S., there is a very high bar for trying to put someone into treatment who does not want to be in treatment. And every county and community, as far as I know, in the country, has some kind of mental health services for people. But it all has to be voluntary, unless they are an imminent threat to themselves or others. And imminent means happening right now.
But haven't we crossed that threshold? I mean, haven't the child is missing. She's creating this fake child on her couch. She's claiming she gave her child away. I wouldn't even allow somebody that I met at a zoo to take care of my cats, who was just meowing. So I'm sorry if you guys heard that. But I mean, haven't we crossed that threshold that there is imminent danger here now?
I think logically we can all look at this and say, just as average human beings, yes, you've crossed a threshold. Legally, you have not, because this is a country that prioritizes individual rights, and that includes the right to refuse medical care. We prioritize that. I'm not saying it's right, but that is the law. We prioritize that above the safety of children. And this is clearly a mentally ill person, but we don't typically in this country mandate people into treatment. As I was told when I worked in the county government system in California, when you had a person who spent their day rolling in the mud and eating out of trash cans, and I said, can't I get them hospitalized? They refused to go. Can't I take away their rights? Which was my job to decide when I could. And I was told by the county attorney, they have the right to roll in the mud and eat out of trash cans in America. And as much as that is indicative of somebody who really is not caring for themselves, the law does not see it that way.
Are we under a false assumption or delusion in this country as a whole that we're a caring, compassionate country people like this? Because I think we tell ourselves that. I think, you know, everybody in their homes are like, well, of course someone would get help. I mean, if I walked into Stacy's house and her cat is missing and she has a stuffed cat or a cat stuffed animal on the couch that she has dressed up like the missing cat, and she's taking missing posters of the cat and placing it on the stuffed cat, and then she's driving around from state to state because the voices are telling her to, because this is where she's going to drop off the cat or find her other cat. There's a danger. She's on the road. She's driving around. This is dangerous. This idea that there's this replica of a missing cat, one would look at this and go, this is not safe. This does look like some sort of imminent, dangerous situation. I would think that one would want to step in, one would want to be compassionate and help a person if they're doing something like this. And obviously, this is a human being we're talking about over here. But is that part of it? Is it that we are under this false assumption that we are truly compassionate, but when it comes down to it, our system prevents us from being compassionate? In fact, it requires us not to be compassionate.
Exactly. And even people who work in the system are compassionate and would love to be able to help, but they're prevented legally by law. And, you know, if you look at the homeless population in every major city and some smaller cities too, people who are raising kids, even living out in tents and living in their vehicles. And I think there's this kind of Calvinistic view that they just don't want to work. They just need to get a job and pull themselves up by their bootstraps. And I've had a hard life and they need to do the right thing. So I think as a culture, we don't understand major mental illness. People don't understand psychosis. I'm trying to educate people on what is psychosis. It is a brain illness. Nobody can control psychosis. It's something that happens. And we used to have institutions where people who couldn't function were placed. Those have all gone away for the most part. And it's not compassionate. The other thing that people don't understand that I'm trying to educate them about, people will say, we need more mental health treatment. We need more mental health treatment. We've got quite a bit of mental health treatment. The problem is people with psychosis do not seek treatment. In fact, they generally, if they have paranoia, they refuse it. And so it doesn't matter how many mental health clinics you have, if people refuse treatment, you're not going to make a dent in the worst cases.
Did we used to require, did we used to have more levers to pull here in situations like this? Where it would be required, where the sane people who aren't suffering from something horrible, and it's not an indictment on someone who's suffering from this. It's just here's what we want to do because you're clearly ill, you need some help. Did we used to have more levers to pull where we could force somebody to get the help they needed when they didn't want it, and that we don't have today?
I think that, and I haven't, you know, research specifically what the laws were going back into the 30s, 40s, and 50s. But there clearly used to be people hospitalized and lobotomized just because, you know, a lot of women, because they pissed their husbands off and they ended up in an institution with a lobotomy. And that was horrible. So I think there was an old movie that came out in the 1940s called The Snake Pit. About, you know, a woman who was in that situation and what these movements were like to try to get people out of institutions. And of course, it's more compassionate if you can have people cared for in the community and if they, you know, have caseworkers and supervisors, and it's lovely to not have to put people in institutions. But I think institutions can be run in a benevolent, ethical manner. And if there aren't situations where people can improve, it's certainly better than letting them roll in the mud and eat out of garbage cans. So I think with the deinstitutional movement, which was starting in the 60s and picked up in the 70s and 80s when the hospital shut down, I think we saw laws being interpreted very, very differently, and this real focus on individual rights to live the life you want, the way you want, no matter how crazy you are.
What would we want to do with Ashley right now if we could, if we didn't have these quote-unquote individual rights that we need to afford for her? What could we do in this moment to change this course?
Any psychotic person, particularly with this degree of paranoia, they're not a happy person. They are miserable. Their own thoughts are tormenting them. And the most compassionate thing you could do is get them on some psychiatric meds that will calm the brain down and let them come back into a state of reality. And very often then, when that happens, they're appalled at their behavior, you know, and they, because sometimes they've done violent things that they never would have done if they weren't hallucinating. So that's that's the thing that needs to happen. There's no kind of talk therapy that is going to make a dent in this. You have to, and that's another hurdle, is that even if you can get them on a hold, meaning, you know, the involuntary hold for 72 hours, which she has been on before, very often there are rules that keep you from medicating them if they don't want to be medicated. And so that's another issue where legally sometimes you have to get a judge to order forced medication just, you know, so they can come back to reality. But so many times the 72-hour hold, it's a Band-Aid, but it's hard to hold legally people after 72 hours. You have to go in and get a court order. And then they're represented by their own attorney who will fight even when it's in their own best interest. I mean, it's a convoluted mess right now.
Jeez. Delusional narratives that change daily. That's one of the details that is jumping out in this story as it continues to shift. She claims she doesn't know who this couple is that she met at this zoo that she decided to give her child to. And I want to talk about this element of the story, because I think it's important, and I don't think she just met a couple at a zoo and gave her kid away. But I'm curious to get your thoughts on how this all plays out. She claims she met a couple at a zoo. She doesn't know their names. Also claims she checked the white pages to make sure that they exist, that she matches. She claims she had a number, then she didn't. She says that she dropped Melody with them. And she says, oh, this is a couple I want Melody to be with because I can't care for her. And they have a little girl and they'll play together. The zoo element is what struck me because it's very specific. It doesn't make a whole hell of a lot of sense why she would pull zoo out of a thin air and say that this somehow connects to the place where her daughter is or the people that she's connecting, that she gave them to. Do you think there's a zoo that plays into this story in some way, shape, or form? And in the effort that they're doing right now is they're searching for Melody out there in the ether. They know the path that she took with her vehicle. Would you be suggesting from the psychological perspective, hey, maybe go look at some zoo security cameras along that route and see what you find?
Certainly wouldn't hurt to do that. Now, if there's any actual meaning to the fact that she pulled the zoo out of her memory, it could have been somewhere she liked to go as a child. Sure. Could have been somewhere that she took Melody often. So it just sort of her brain created the story. But yeah, I would be looking everywhere, and it certainly wouldn't hurt to be looking through zoo if they have security cameras. Yeah.
Man. What there's a lot of roads that you could go down in this one, and I want to talk about what she's been conveying of this idea that she met this couple, she thought they were a good couple, she knows nothing about the couple, gives her daughter to the couple. The story that she's saying as to why she was going from state to state in very bizarre patterns was that the other couple, they didn't want. They thought they were being tracked. They were being tracked by the government. I mean, obviously, this is what Ashley is also thinking as well. And that's why they had to keep moving the meeting spot for where they were going to drop Melody off with this other couple. The possibilities here are really kind of endless. This couple may not exist whatsoever. This may be completely a figment of her imagination. Mm-hmm. The couple may exist. A person may exist. People may exist that may have agreed to take the daughter. I'm thinking more like trafficking the daughter and in the delusional state of Ashley Buzzard, thinking, oh, they're going to take care of my daughter. And then she inadvertently gives it to traffickers, because part of the story that she also said was that this couple was going to let her do FaceTime or have a conversation with her daughter every day to check on her while she went in for this this treatment, that this procedure that she needed to go for. But she hasn't heard back from this couple yet, and she doesn't know their number or their name or anything. In this weird delusional state, do you think there was another couple that she did give the daughter too? Could this have been a trafficking situation where maybe she even does in some aspect realize what she did, that she gave her child to complete strangers it may have trafficked, and she can't deal with that reality? And now this other reality is taking hold in her delusional state?
Anything is possible. You know, once a person becomes this ill, they create stories, they believe the stories, and yet the stories can change from day to day and bounce all over the place. I had contact with a man once who believed on one day he was an alien from outer space, placed on Earth for some convoluted reason, and the next day he thought he was reincarnated JFK, you know. So it bounces all over the place. There may be some kind of logic behind it, or, you know, as you say, it's a possibility that she did give her daughter to some couple. And yeah, no well-meaning, well-intended people would be involved in a case
right.
like
no.
this.
That's the other thing. Like, what kind of a couple actually says, yeah, okay, cool, that works for us.
Mm-hmm. That's what I wonder about this. Is there some sliver of truth into this story of you met these people, they recognized that this mother is not well, and it just kind of was the perfect storm of, yeah, we take kids, and they saw her as an easy target and mark mm-hmm. and convinced her, yeah, let's do this. And the only way to really process the consequences of her actions are to make this whole story up that she's put into her mind, or mm-hmm. it could be made up for complete other reasons too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's the question. I want to talk about another very disturbing aspect of it. That's the shrine. That's the pillow that is dressed in the child's clothes. She allegedly has one of those like bed arm pillows that, you know, that kind of has the arms on it that mm-hmm. you can lay on in bed. That's what she's allegedly dressed up in, I believe, like a sweatshirt of Melody's. There's some pants there, and allegedly missing posters that she tore down and then attached to the pillow as well. A shrine, a representative of this child. It almost is like reminiscent of some sort of, you know, horror scene of getting a decrepit My Buddy doll out of a 1980s closed down mall, along with maybe her makeup collection. Maybe that explains the makeup. But it's completely, it's disturbing, it's bizarre, it's almost altar-like. What do you make out of something like this, where someone is literally recreating mm-hmm. a dummy of their daughter that is actively missing?
Yeah. My guess is that by doing this, she's creating her little surrogate that gives her comfort. And any normal person would look at this and go, you know, this is really icky and creepy and strange. But in her convoluted way of looking at reality right now, it's sort of like, here's this symbolic daughter that she feels a sense of attachment to and a sense of comfort from, even though to a normal mind that would make no sense.
Doesn't this just add to the pile of, okay, we're dealing with somebody who's not well here. We need to do something. We need to intervene at this point.
Mm-hmm.
I keep asking, why haven't we crossed that threshold?
Why can't it intervene? I know.
Exactly.
Because like when you hear this, it's like, okay, she's just being elusive. Now she has like an alter ego doll of her daughter. Mm-hmm. She's mm-hmm. packing her daughter's things into a U-Haul. She's now claimed that she's dropped her daughter off with strangers. How is none of this child endangerment at this point?
Yeah, we're checking the boxes now.
It is. child endangerment.
Why did they arrest her? Why did they charge her?
Because legally it's not. And this is where we need to, you know, I'll come on sometime and let's get one of the lawyers who can speak to the laws and how we get the laws changed. Because judges' hands are tied. Child welfare workers' hands are tied. Mental health workers' hands are tied, and it's you know, a ridiculous situation. And but then,
why even have rules then if we've got a case that seems so blatantly obvious here? What are the rules even in place for? Why do we even have these organizations? What are they there for? When can they actually do something? If this case doesn't rise to that level, what good is any of it? I hate to sound so pessimistic, but I'm just like, you know, if we're sitting here with a note card and we're checking off, okay, she's done this, she's done this, she's done this, she's done all of this.
Mm-hmm.
And no. I don't mean to be getting like angry, but what the F?
Yeah, it's this incredibly high threshold, basically blood on the floor, a child being starved, a kid being taken into the ER with broken bones. Parents do get charged when, let's say it's a child with diabetes and they're withholding insulin because of their faith healing beliefs. You know, there are a lot of kids in foster care. Kids are taken out of very, very dangerous situations, but it is not, and I'm agreeing with everything you say, but it's not just because of mental illness. The law does not see that as an imminent danger. This law sees that mentally ill people have the right to raise kids. And I think it's terrible.
But she's not raising her anymore. I mean, she's given her to people she says she doesn't know who they are. Doesn't that qualify under like danger to self or others? That would be danger to others. Dangers directly to her daughter that she put her daughter into. If I were to give my daughter to a complete stranger and say, I don't know who they are. I met them at a zoo. And they look lovely. And I didn't get any contact information. They said they're going to call me on Tuesday. Is that not putting the person you're in charge of in direct danger? How does that path not equate to you're coming with us?
Mm-hmm. Well, I would agree with you. I do agree with you. And it makes me quite ill, and just as many social workers in the system become ill and quit because of this kind of thing.
Yeah.
And so that's another question for the judge and how the law reads very specifically imminent danger. Why does it have to be, well, we have evidence of blood on the floor somewhere, you know, it's not right. And we do need to do something to straighten it out, if we really care.
I think that's the real question. If we really care, do we just sit here and, I mean, this is in a lot of ways, I was drawing references in my mind to the Uvalde school shooting way back, where there's like literally 200 officers standing outside as one person walks through and continues to execute children. And they're all like, well, we didn't get the order. We don't want to violate the, you know, the bureaucracy and the chain of command. So we just, you know, we can't do anything.
Yeah.
That's what this is starting to feel like. I'm starting to wonder why there's no one, and unfortunately probably because there's no one close enough in the life of Melody that's ever existed, or Ashley, because they've all been pushed away or have been completely prevented from being a part of their lives. I'm wondering why there's no aunts, uncles, grandparents that are literally just going up to her door with a battering ram and just breaking in and going, look, bitch, you're going to fucking talk. Yeah. If this were my grandkid, I'd be there doing it.
Oh,
I'd be
waterboarding
the bitch, getting her to talk.
Yeah.
Come arrest me. Take me away. If this is going to help me get to determining where that child is, so freaking be it. But we don't have that. Nobody's doing anything. We're all just kind of like watching this insane show play out as she loads her stuff into a U-Haul and talks to her pillow pet.
Yeah, and we really need to look at, when we're talking about changing the laws, expanding the law to recognize that psychological danger from being raised by a mentally ill parent, that's a thing, that's real. It's not just when they're not being fed. It's not just when a bone is broken. Living with a mentally ill parent causes damage. And this is sort of, it's like this slow train of damage rather than this big violent event that happened. And at this point, the law does not recognize that kind of damage. And we need to expand the criteria for, you know, if a school makes a report about a parent coming in paranoid, that they can request a mental health evaluation be done, and that social workers can request it now, because now social workers' hands are really tied. And so laws can be changed. I was making a list a few days ago about all the different things that should happen. So we just need, you know, more support when parents are kind of, there's a red flag. It's like, can we call and get more support, not just a social worker who goes out one time to assess for dangerousness, but people that go in to really monitor and spend time and evaluate, you know, what is this long-term situation that this kid is living under? Because in the case of Ashley here, she's already lost one daughter. One daughter was taken away. And apparently Melody was taken away before.
Yes, we have a track record.
And this is where the law now tries to support, in all cases, it tries to support reunifying. This is the priority, not child safety. And yeah, it's crazy.
It's like, let's just keep bringing him back to the predators. Yeah. Let's keep taking him back to the danger. Like,
exactly.
We just rescued them out of the burning inferno.
Yeah.
Well, there might be a good spot in there for marshmallows. Let's bring them back. What? No, this is insane. This is utterly insane.
Yeah.
There's another element here. The list of disturbing is off the charts of what Ashley Banfield got the other night when she was talking with the gentleman who went in there that had a conversation with her. And one of the most disturbing lines that was revealed in that conversation on News Nation the other night was a Casey Anthony comparison. Mm-hmm. He had brought up, one of them brought up that there was a lot of people are comparing you to Casey Anthony. And the alleged response from Ashley Buzzard was, "At least I'm not out partying." When being compared to Casey Anthony. Siobhan, when a parent in a missing child case casually jokes about a notoriously infamous, psychologically disturbing case where we know what actually took place here, what does that signal to you about insight, empathy, or what the hell is actually happening behind the scenes here?
Yeah, you wonder how much does she really identify with her and then try to point out this contrast. Well, I'm not that bad. And yeah, it's another red flag. And you know, her misperception on every bit of the reality that's going on here is striking.
It is. It's beyond striking. It. I don't know who's crazier here, us for allowing a system that does not function appropriately like this, or Ashley. I mean, because if we're all standing here, literally, this is just turning into a show. You know, it is watching the zoo animals. You know, but who's the one that's the animal here? Is it us or is it her?
It's a horror movie. It really feels like, you know, a movie where we're all just witnessing going, oh, this could never happen in real life. It's too horrible. It's too strange. Yeah.
So can I throw in a comment that I've been watching develop? Somebody, I'm trying to figure out the name here. It looks like it might have been cut off, not Sydney Shea. Concerned that we are blanket statement-ing mentally ill people, that they do have a right to raise children. And again, allegedly, definitely. Right. And I don't think that we are saying that mentally ill people should not be raising children. I was raised by a mentally ill man.
Yeah. Mental illness is quite a scale, right? I mean, people with depression, people with anxiety, that's different from raging florid psychosis, where you're hallucinating and having delusions. And that's why we talk about a mental health evaluation by somebody who can say, does this meet a bar of a major severe mental illness? And we're talking about psychosis with that, which is very, very different from someone with depression or anxiety.
Well, it becomes when those decisions made by the person who's mentally ill start affecting others in adverse ways. It's not just the mental damage. Do they become a risk to somebody's physical safety and well-being?
Yeah.
Yes, but clearly when they affect people in adverse ways, we do nothing.
Well, so, and that's the point that we are really bringing home right now.
So
hardcore.
What are we doing? Like, what is the bar? I mean, there doesn't appear to be one. It's just kind of like, well, we know you got this. Yeah, so you say you're on your meds. You're clearly not on your meds. You've now disappeared your child, and we're still just like, well, you still got rights. That's where we're at.
Yeah. At the end of the day, there is a child who is still not accounted for.
Yeah.
And that's where the big problem is. If she's okay and she's fine, that's great. Then we move on to another story. But right now there is a child who is not accounted for and is missing, who will not be sitting at a Thanksgiving table eating turkey and making comments about the cranberry sauce and how they don't like it. She's not going to be there.
Right.
Yeah.
And the other thing I'll throw in is that in doing a mental health evaluation, one of the things you look for is paranoia. Because when paranoid people, when it gets to a severe degree, that's when they become dangerous. And there's paranoia jumping out all over in this case with Ashley, in every direction, paranoia. And that's another red flag. People can be mildly psychotic and have maybe really weird religious beliefs, strange dietary practices. I mean, there are lots of mild, low levels of psychosis where they're not really dangerous to their kids. Maybe it's not an optimal environment, but maybe with more supervision and people coming into the home just to kind of monitor. Yeah, you wouldn't necessarily have to remove the child, but because that's not uncommon either. But when somebody is paranoid, that's a red flag for they're increasingly capable of doing something dangerous or violent.
And that's the disturbing part. I mean, I don't think anyone's expecting the system to act here in perfection, but they're also not asking for it to answer with paralysis, which is exactly where it is sitting right now. Such a disturbing case. You guys keep leaving your comments, and we will reply to them. But we want to hear your thoughts, so please do that in the comments section there on YouTube. I want to move now on to another case. This is another disturbing one. This is out of Wisconsin. It's the Slender Man attempted murderer. This case is disturbing on a level that goes far beyond a simple escape. What we're looking at here is the breakdown of every safeguard put in place to protect the public from a violent offender whose crime was rooted in delusion, psychosis, and a complete loss of reality. Morgan Geiser didn't just wander away from a group home. She cut off her ankle monitor, left a state-supervised placement, crossed into another state with a 42-year-old man, and was found because local police stumbled onto her behind a truck stop in Illinois, south of Chicago. And the part that's raising every alarm bell right now is how she got into that neighborhood in the first place. Because this wasn't a halfway house with secure doors. This wasn't locked psychiatric settings. This was a residential street with families and children who were never told she was living there. This is someone who stabbed a classmate 19 times under the belief that a fictional internet creature demanded it, placed quietly into a community with a sealed address and supervised nothing more than by a GPS bracelet that she removed in minutes. And they put her there because the last community that they were supposed to move her into found out about it and said, hell no. So the system said, okay, we just won't tell anybody this time. So today with Siobhan Scott, psychotherapist and author, I want to spend some time on the psychological side of this, not just the crime, not just the escape, but the thinking behind these release decisions. What was missed? What was misunderstood? And how does someone with a violent, delusion-driven history get classified as safe enough for a neighborhood when the behavior we're seeing now looks like a warning sign blinking in neon. Siobhan, when you go back to the original Slender Man attack, a child acting out a violent delusion with ritualistic intent, what does that signal clinically about the severity of her mental illness at that time? And even with treatment, how does a clinician weigh the potential for future relapse into that kind of thinking?
Yeah, she was diagnosed with schizophrenia and childhood onset, which is unusual. Usually it develops in early adulthood, late teens, or into mid-20s. And so this is someone who is very, very impaired. She is never going to not be schizophrenic. She's never going to not be at risk. And the type of violence, the way that they lured the other girl out into the woods before attacking her, I mean, this is a horrendous case, which is why it's gotten, you know, the amount of attention it's gotten and why it's rightfully causing us now to look at how are decisions made to put a person in a conditional release program and put them out into a group home. It's, of course, right now looks really questionable. But the interesting thing is, a person like this, often when they're in an institution for the criminally insane, all variables are controlled. They're on their psych meds. Their taking of the meds is supervised. They have a lot of intensive treatment. They have a lot of therapy. You know, they're looked at all the time. So they may be very calm and cooperative while they're in that setting. They may have learned not to share fantasies that are going to be a red flag, you know, so you can have these manipulative psychopathic traits along with the schizophrenia. And that makes a person really dangerous. So as I understand the case, her attorney petitioned for conditional release, which people who are, you know, not guilty by reason of insanity and put in a secure mental health facility, they have the right to do that. And they got three psychologists to sign off on this. And those are the people I'd like to talk to. How did you come to this decision?
Yeah.
Based upon the severity of this young woman's illness and the violence at such a young age, why in the world would you do that? Now, the interesting thing to me here is I worked in a conditional release program where I was going in and interviewing people from our county in California who had committed similar kinds of crimes and lesser crimes too. But that was part of my role, was to evaluate, would I recommend this person for release? I never did. I never saw, and I didn't work there years and years. I worked there for a few years. But I was just so cautious and so conservative about it. If there had been something violent, I didn't want that to come back on my head. Well, you're the one that recommended release here. Mm-hmm. So again, there's a subjective element to it, and also the fact that she could have been quite manipulative.
Are there any consequences for people? I mean, let me ask you that. You're saying you never did. Clearly, there's various degrees of mental illness, and there's going to be some where a conditional release probably would make some sort of sense, and there's going to be some that it will never make sense.
Yeah.
No matter how well they're presenting, no matter how well their institutional compliance is going, no matter what, there's like two categories here. Some, no matter how well, they're never going to be over here. Mm-hmm. They can't. You can't turn a cat into a dog. The dog can't be a cat.
Correct.
It is what it is. But when you have this sort of thing happen and someone says, you know what? Yeah, you don't have to keep going up the scale of protection or just maintain where you're at. We're going to keep downgrading this. We're now the only thing preventing you from getting out into the public is a piece of plastic around your ankle, and good wishes and thoughts and prayers. Are there any consequences for the people that make those decisions, for those psychologists that signed off and said, yes, sounds like a great idea, judge? Because at the end of the day, the judge can't be the psychologist. The psychologist right. can't be the judge. The right. judge is relying on the expertise of the doctors, of the medical community, to do their fucking job mm-hmm. and to actually give information and diagnoses and plans for treatment that make sense, that are proven, that work. not just sign off here and say this seems like a lovely idea? Are there consequences, or can people just make these choices and say, yeah, judge, she'll be great, and then when she isn't, does anything ever fall back on them?
Other than, you know, damage to their reputation, probably. And if she had, let's say, gotten out and committed more violence and hurt somebody, I'm guessing they could be sued by the families or the individuals. There's always the risk of civil consequences. And that's the only thing I can think of, is that, you know, maybe they have to stop doing that kind of work because they're not considered reputable anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a board that actually looks at that and says, okay, enough is enough?
There's always a licensing board, and any mental health professional, MD or, you know, any kind of psychologist, you can always make a complaint to a licensing board. That doesn't mean that anything will happen. Yeah. They would have the right to respond to the complaint. And I'm guessing that, you know, they could rationalize, well, these were this was the checklist, and she had completed everything she was supposed to complete in treatment. She was compliant. She had insight into why, you know, she committed the crime. She regrets doing it. She's sorry. She says she'll never do it again. I mean, they can probably say, this is why we went down the checklist and went with it.
These are professionals, though. This is not me or Stacy or Todd, people who aren't trained in these areas. These are people who are making these calls and making the decision of, yes, this person, you know, is checking these boxes. How misleading can that stability be to a professional, to an expert, to someone who's a doctor in this area who understands this? Do we sometimes, are they mistaking the institutional compliance for true recovery, especially in cases where the original violence came from delusion rather than impulse? I mean, what is going on here in their minds that it's like, okay, this seems to be the right outfit? Because I'm not thinking they're sitting there going, let's set up Halloween 28 and Michael Myers is now her. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I just don't think that that's what they're doing, but it turns out it sure seems like that's the script they're writing.
It's I think, further evidence that no person can really completely know what's going on in the mind of another person. And some people may have a bias. They may have a bias for release. When somebody committed a crime at a very young age, I probably have a bias against release because I'm so invested in protection of the community. And so all I can say is people can be fooled, and they can have a pre-existing bias that influences that.
People can be fooled, or are they fools? I think that's part of the question here with the people who would look at this. Because, again, just like you had said, it's not hard to look at this and go, she will never be well.
Right.
She won't. She will never be well. Can she be medicated? Sure. Can she be this? Can she be? Yes. But she will never be well on her own. And that's just the pure black and white of it. It's cruel. It's unusual to think of this any other way, to have some sort of false sense of hope or prayer that, oh, things will work out, things will be okay. That's ignorant, and it's dangerous, and it is cruel, and it's not helping the individual that has the problem either. It goes beyond just worrying about what's going to happen in the community if they get out. It's dangerous to themselves. It just seems that, are people getting so caught up in their own minutiae of bullshit, of their hopes and prayers for these people, that they don't see the writing on the wall, or just accept reality on reality's terms, that some people, the best thing for them is to be in this controlled environment?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree with you. Her odds for making it out in the real world in any kind of a normal setting, very, very poor to non-existent. And is it kind to set someone up for failure? And again, looking at the issue of potential dangerousness, because a person like this, when they're in a controlled facility where they're on medication, they may be doing much better. But when they get out, they're not going to have access to the medication, or they very often choose not to take the medication.
Yeah.
And they can deteriorate in as little as 24 hours into delusions again.
Well, and a lot of times what you're fighting with is they feel better. So they think they don't need the meds. You get into this vicious circle of how do you make them take their meds so they continue to stay better? It's just, it's so hard.
You make
them
take their meds by taking away rights, something that we don't like doing.
Right.
The red flags that were overlooked here before her release are really just staggering. Staff reported disturbing reading material, violent themes, concerning contact with an adult murder memorabilia collector. This is where you have the medical community and the judge meeting. And the judge saying, this isn't all that bad. I mean, from a clinical standpoint, how big of a warning sign is it when someone with a history of delusion-based violence becomes fascinated with dark, violent material again or forms relationships with adults who reinforce that mindset or are actively collecting murder memorabilia from one of the most famous attempted murderers in the state of Wisconsin?
Right. Huge red flags. And that would be enough right there, regardless of the rest of her behavior, you know, how compliant she was or how insightful she seemed. That material would be enough of a red flag for me to say no, absolutely not, because it's showing a preoccupation. It's showing where the fantasies are going and that she's finding things that feed dangerous fantasies. And I think all that stuff is very relevant in a case like this.
If you were sitting at the Thanksgiving table with these with the folks who said, "Yeah, this is a great idea. Let's place her in the neighborhood program over here. Let's ignore all these red flags over here." What would you be asking them over the cranberry Jell-O mold?
Yeah. What was their checklist that they went down and thought that this was a good idea? And I would be very curious about how they do the assessment and what might they have seen that they didn't count, that they thought that didn't weigh in. I mean, it would just be an interesting discussion.
Can you imagine being in that neighborhood and going, wait, who was here?
Well, that's the big thing. The decision to place her in the neighborhood is shocking. She was approved for a group home in a quiet Madison neighborhood on a street and location that was sealed so the public wouldn't protest. The first one they were looking at, I believe, was Sun Prairie. I could be wrong, but I think that's what it was. And the community found out and said no, big uproar. So what does the system do? They don't try and find another neighborhood that's going to be accepting of it. They just take the back route. They go behind the scenes and don't tell anyone. And I guess by law, they don't have to, which is another thing I think people go, "Well, I thought the system kind of had to do that." Surprise, it doesn't. From a psychological and risk assessment perspective, I mean, when you're doing this and you're placing a violent offense patient into an unsecure, low-structure residential setting.
There it is.
Is there nothing? I mean, is there really nobody that needs to be notified about this whatsoever? I know there's a sex offender registry and that sort of stuff where that sort of, but apparently there's nothing for this. Yeah. You can just kind of plop them out wherever.
Yeah, apparently there isn't. I have not heard of a situation where there's anything like the sex offender law. Is it possible that it's done differently in some locations? I can't say for sure that there's not anywhere something like that where neighbors are notified, but I've not heard about it.
Let's talk about the person that she was found with, 42-year-old male. Obviously, I don't even know all the details on this person, but obviously just looking and studying the beginnings of this, someone who probably is not in the greatest of mental state as well, saying that they were not the reason she escaped, not the person that helped her, but they were along for the ride the entire time. I guess the question goes to what sort of restrictions are placed on these people when they're in this supervised 24-hour group home that you're supposed to be relegated to like 2058 or something, on their communications with the outside world? Is there just carte blanche, you do whatever you want until someone dies or you escape, or is it monitored? Is there anything that prevents them from being preyed upon, because I would think that would be a big thing, versus meeting up with other like-minded, mentally ill individuals. And I don't know if he is or not, but obviously someone not in a healthy mindset.
Right. Right. Yeah. I watched the video of the arrest of both of them, and he struck me as a person who was really not well and, you know, very bizarre appearance. And they were sleeping, you know, on the sidewalk at the truck stop. I mean, you know, this was not a well person.
No.
What kind of restrictions would depend on the in a conditional release situation, the person is released with something called terms and conditions, and they have to comply with whatever. Usually it's this long list of these are the things you can do, these are the things you can't do. And, you know, for somebody with a history of child molest, they can't be near a park, they can't communicate with children. I mean, it's got all these things. And even one violation of the terms and conditions, they go back and they're locked up again. And so what would have been in her terms and conditions, we don't know. But sometimes they're forbidden from in the home using the internet. Sometimes it's controlled where they can go. If they can, you know, have start dating again, that the therapist would have to meet with the person they're dating. I mean, it all depends. It would probably be individual to the person. So I don't really know what kind of freedom she had.
When you talk about there being a checklist, okay, but like so many things that sound great on paper of, oh, okay, good. Well, see, they have to do this. So this is what's going to keep them safe. Who's checking for compliance?
Right.
How many cases are they managing?
Right.
And is it remotely realistic to expect someone to be able to keep up with keeping everything in check in situations like this?
I can say it's different from state to state. The program I worked in, each therapist, and you had to be a therapist with a lot of experience, so no newbies. Mm-hmm. And there were four of us, and we each had no more than seven cases.
That's not bad.
No, it was not bad at all. And we had daily contact, group once a week, drug testing regularly every month, random drug tests, home visits. We would go in, and the home visit means you can go in and search everything in the home. You look at their medications, you count their, you know, count the pills. Are they taking them the way they're supposed to be taking them? It was very closely monitored, and I don't think we ever had a bad outcome. We didn't have anybody reoffend. There were some that, you know, you get a dirty drug test. Sorry, you've got THC in your system. You're supposed to be clean. You go back. And we would have the police come out immediately, pick them up and take them back. And that was it. They had their chance. So there were people that had been in our program for like 20, 30 years because they did well with the structure. And we were not paying to keep them in an institution, and they were cooperative, and they didn't ever reoffend. So I can say these programs are appropriate for some people sometimes, and it can be run well.
There's some a comment, people sometimes. Go ahead, Stacey.
There's a comment from Amy saying, I heard the group home was only 8 miles from her victim. I know we've got just a little bit of time left here, but if that's the case, that seems like the system's not paying attention and doesn't give a rat's ass about the victim, because why would you put the perpetrator so close to the victim so that if there were a breach,
and what happens to the victim? It's important to say we don't know that for a fact.
We don't know that for a fact, but I'm concerned about why would you put them in close proximity to a victim, even within 50 miles?
Right. Right. Yeah, we'd have to look at the policies of that organization there and how closely. I mean, it doesn't sound compassionate for the victim.
No.
Even if she was never going to reoffend again, the psychological stress on the victim, you know, we would want to do it differently.
Well, I'm glad we solved all these problems again today. Siobhan Scott, thank you so much for being on and giving us your insight into another crazy case. Her book, Nightbird, it is available right now wherever books are sold. Highly recommended. Check it out. Stocking stuffer. Depending on the size of your stocking, you might need to, like, you know, kind of bend it to get in there. But whatever you need to do, It's a good one, and I do highly recommend checking it out. And the audiobook is also available if you're out traveling over the holidays. You need a good read from point A to point B as you go
in
over
Siobhan's,
the river.
In Siobhan's voice.
Yes. In Siobhan's voice, very and it's soothing. Her real voice. It's not an AI voice. It is Siobhan's voice. So as you're traveling over the river and through the woods to wherever you may be going, hopefully it's to grandmother's house, not to the site where you dumped a body and you're going to revisit for a ritualized every once a year stop. You can read it. I had to, you know, that'd be, I'm sure some people are doing that this holiday season. You gotta, you know, you gotta reach out to everybody, be inclusive, right? All right. That's going to wrap up this episode. Happy Thanksgiving, everybody. If you're watching us live, in the States, hope you all have a safe one. Hope all of you guys have a safe one. For Stacey, for Todd, for Siobhan, I'm Tony Bruschi. We will talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.
You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. Yet you still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is, managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all of your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money you wasted. Plus, you can use the Smart Savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved them more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple app or Google Play stores.
Here's golf legend John Daly.
Hell yeah, these wins are piling up faster than my divorces.
I only spent on Moto, America's social casino. You know I've won a couple of majors. And on Moto, I've won majors, grands, and epic jackpots on their classic Vegas slots with huge, huge bonus rounds. Moto Casino adds new games and awards players free coins every single day. Grip it and spin it on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today. Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit moto.us for more details.
Okay, it's kind of embarrassing how bad I am at budgeting.
Let me see your charges.
Fine.
You spent over $600 on takeout last month.
I can't cook. You know this.
Yes, I have had your disgusting food, but you're literally paying for a meal subscription on top of that.
Whoa, wait. That can't be right.
Look, just get Rocket Money. It shows you all of your expenses in one place and even tracks your subscriptions. And if there's a subscription you don't want, which for you, there are a lot you don't need, you can just cancel right in the app with a few taps.
So you mean I don't have to call anyone to cancel?
Nope. No hold times or anything. And they'll even try to get you a refund on some of the months of wasted money, which is a lot of money for you.
Okay.
And if you thought I was done, I'm not. The app can also help you make a budget that works for your income. Anytime you get close to your spending limits, it alerts you, so you know exactly where your money is going at all times.
All right, I'm in. What do I have to do?
Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple or Google Play stores.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. Yet you still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is, managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all of your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money you wasted. Plus, you can use the Smart Savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved them more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
Here's golf legend John Daly.
Hell yeah, these wins are piling up faster than my divorces.
I only spent on Moto, America's social casino. You know I've won a couple of majors. And on Moto, I've won majors, grands, and epic jackpots on their classic Vegas slots with huge, huge bonus rounds. Moto Casino adds new games and awards players free coins every single day. Grip it and spin it on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today. Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit moto.us for more details.
Okay, it's kind of embarrassing how bad I am at budgeting.
Let me see your charges.
Fine.
You spent over $600 on takeout last month.
I can't cook. You know this.
Yes, I have had your disgusting food, but you're literally paying for a meal subscription on top of that.
Whoa, wait. That can't be right.
Look, just get Rocket Money. It shows you all of your expenses in one place and even tracks your subscriptions. And if there's a subscription you don't want, which for you, there are a lot you don't need, you can just cancel right in the app with a few taps.
So you mean I don't have to call anyone to cancel?
Nope. No hold times or anything. And they'll even try to get you a refund on some of the months of wasted money, which is a lot of money for you.
Okay.
And if you thought I was done, I'm not. The app can also help you make a budget that works for your income. Anytime you get close to your spending limits, it alerts you, so you know exactly where your money is going at all times.
All right, I'm in. What do I have to do?
Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple or Google Play stores.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. Yet you still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is, managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all of your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money you wasted. Plus, you can use the smart savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved them more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play stores.
Here's golf legend John Daly.
Hell yeah, these wins are piling up faster than my divorces.
I only spent on Moto, America's social casino. You know I've won a couple of majors. And on Moto, I've won majors, grands, and epic jackpots on their classic Vegas slots with huge, huge bonus rounds. Moto Casino adds new games and awards players free coins every single day. Grip it and spin it on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. You still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money wasted. Plus, you can use the smart savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play stores.
Moto Casino. America. America's Social Casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino. America's Social Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Truth is, Ohio, when it comes to broccoli salad, you got the secret ingredient on lock. Miracle Whip. You know it, your neighbors know it, heck, everyone from Toledo to Portsmouth knows it. That tangy zip of Miracle Whip is the reason why Ohio's broccoli salad runs circles around everybody else's and never gets winded. So here's to you for keeping it bold, keeping it zippy, and keeping Miracle Whip right where it belongs in all your favorite recipes. Buy Miracle Whip at your local grocery store and get your tang on, Ohio.
You ain't heard about Moto Casino? Moto has real Vegas slots. Any game you can find on the floor in Vegas, you can play it on Moto. I like my slots hot. Moto's free to play, like food stamps. In line at the grocery store, at a funeral, in traffic. Keep your eyes on the road. Hop on Moto Casino. Moto Casino got jackpots that are bigger than my belly. Moto, America's hottest free to play social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino.
This time of year, most of us are checking off our holiday gift lists. But identity thieves have lists too, and your personal information might be on them. Protect your identity with LifeLock. LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second and alerts you to threats you could miss. If your identity is stolen, LifeLock will fix it, guaranteed, or your money back. Make this season about joy, not identity theft, with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year at LifeLock.com/iHeart. Terms apply.